told them so. You're second to none. The love of all mankind should reflect some sign of these words I've tried to recite.
All right, Curtis, Curtis, Curtis. We have a great panel here with us here this morning. I want you to join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet me at Mark Steiner. In studio is Melody Simmons, one of an independent journalist and reporter for the Baltimore Brew. Over 35 years of journalism experience in our community, nominated for a Pulitzer. Joins us in the studio once again. Melody, good to have you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Marshall Bell is in the studio, host of the Midday Magazine with Marshall Bell and WOLB, managing partner for the Bell Group, LLC, author of the novel, his latest work, Baltimore Blues, Harm City. Good to see you, Marshall.
Good morning, sir.
Always good to see you.
Always.
our friend Jason Rodriguez joins us by phone, technical and editing manager for DMV Daily. Jason, welcome.
Good morning, panel. Good morning, Mr. Steiner. And congratulations to the 2014 graduation class of Morgan State.
Yay. There we go. All right.
Congratulations.
410-319-8888. And had a great graduation speaker this year. The great Attorney General of the United States of America spoke to them, and he's pulling no punches as he goes out. But we're not here to talk about that tonight. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on last night's gubernatorial a debate between the Democratic candidates that happened on Maryland Public Television that we watched at home last night, and it was an interesting debate. Melody? Yep.
Well, it moved the ball down the field a little further, to use a sports phrase, and I was very impressed that some answers were given, although they weren't a lot of answers. I'm talking about the lieutenant governor when he was asked point blank about the health care exchange. Very interesting to hear what he had to say when he finally opened up and answered that question people have been wondering for many, many months, and counting the dollars. So I think we moved the ball down the field a little.
I get the sense, though, Marshall Bell, you were a little underwhelmed.
Pretty much. You know, I did not watch the debate, but I have read the transcripts. And, you know, really what I take away from it is that in all this time, during the course of this campaign, Gansler has really yet to come up with anything more substantive than the healthcare exchange. You know, and I think that's people just are not interested in the campaign and in the race. You got to inject some energy as a de facto challenger, which is really what he is. He's challenging the administration, so to speak, Brown, moving forward. And that's the best you can come up with. And folks, it's just not really connecting with people, particularly in this state, which is a rather liberal state. And to criticize, because people really, by extension, when you criticize the healthcare exchange, by extension, you know, you're criticizing Obama, and you're not going to really get much ground with that. Now, maybe some more conservative Democrats, perhaps, but with your run-of-the-mill Democrat, they want to hear some more new ideas in that, and that's the best he's come up with in all these months, and it's not really moved the needle much.
Well, I think what they're looking at mostly with the lieutenant governor is just the Maryland, what's happened in Maryland with the system and
sure.
and the waste that's happened. I don't see it as a criticism of the president. I personally see it, and
I know how people interpret it.
Well, they might interpret it that way, but I know if you are on the phone trying to sign up, and I have friends who were, it has been the most frustrating experience. It has rolled on, and nobody understands why.
Right.
Jason, what's your take?
I'm just glad to see the lieutenant governor showed up, and he wasn't MIA or AWOL. You know, I think it really hurt him to skip out of a televised debate, but I was glad to see that he showed up at this one. And was able to at least show us and to explain to us his responsibility in the healthcare debacle. I found it funny that he kept pointing out these deficiencies within Maryland, you know, that we have these deficiencies, that we don't have blue ribbon schools all throughout the state. But yet he was the co-captain of this administration that had two terms to really try to fix and solve a lot of these issues that he brought up are still deficiencies after 8 years and two terms. You know, so I really found it kind of funny that he kept bringing up these deficiencies. But again, he was riding along this ship alongside with Governor O'Malley and really and truly could have taken some sort of responsibility into trying to resolve some of these issues, knowing that he was looking at taking a leadership role in the state and possibly running for governor. For him to only have the health care as the only accomplishment, and it's a failed launch, and we know that there is an issue with $200 million, and even though he's taken responsibility and has said that he's fired contractors in the process, the work has already been performed. People have already gotten paid for bad goods, and there doesn't seem to be anyone that's going to be held necessarily liable for the debacle of the health care exchange rollout.
So, folks, what do you all think? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow at gmail.com. I'd love to know what you're thinking about last night's debate. If you watched it, and if you didn't watch it, why didn't you watch it? And where you stand in this race on the Democrat or Republican side. 410-319-8888 is number here to hear your thoughts as we open the program talking about the gubernatorial debate. I mean, when I watched last night, personally, I thought that Gansler seemed stronger than he's ever seemed in any debate I've seen him so far. Brown, I think, equipped himself pretty well as well in his responses. I mean, and so the way the debate was set up, for a minute it sounded almost like Mazier was going to be left out in the cold because they weren't attacking her, so she wasn't able to come back for the response. But I think that some of the clear issues that came out last night to divide these candidates were around the issue of taxes and how big an issue will taxes be in this coming election this fall. Will be a part of telling of the tale, and also in this Democratic primary. I think that's a piece of what. And the other thing was around the marijuana legislation,
right,
and around environment and jobs,
right,
and the minimum wage. There's clear differences between these candidates, I think, in these areas.
And where does the state go from here? If you listen to the business community, there's a big debate going on, and it's very disjointed in the data and the facts. The business community claims they're overtaxed. You talk to a small business owner, the burden is heavy. Yet you hear from the administration, we have jobs. But then you hear that if people could and would leave the state, they would because of the business climate here. So this is a big issue. You have the GBC involved in looking into wanting to launch a task force on it. So there is no settled, that nothing is settled on this issue as well. So the issue of taxes is big.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. If Gansler is not successful, he's definitely laying the groundwork for the Republican nominee. Because, again, taxes is an issue, and everybody's feeling it. And it's not just taxes, it's also fees. And it's really, that fees is really hurting the regular.
Tolls.
The average man on the ground. We talk about taxes as far as businesses, but just to live in this state has become nearly unbearable, and everybody's feeling it, and everybody knows it. But I wonder how much traction even that issue will get. Because it's, you know, it's still the same kind of lies, tax and spend versus the liberal spend. You know, well, I mean, it's the same kind of stuff.
You know, it's funny. I was reading an article the other day about Jerry Brown in California. And Jerry Brown is on the opposite of what most people think will work. Yeah. Now, I have my issues with some of the things he's done around incarceration and other things. But in terms of taxes and the state, he entered into a state that had close to a $1 billion deficit. Now they have over a $1 billion surplus. Mm. He did what people thought couldn't happen. He raised taxes to ensure that teachers got raises, police got raises, schools were built, roads were built, and he's going to get elected again at 76. So it depends on how you approach these things. I mean, you know, this debates are happening all across the country the same way, taxes, no taxes. I mean, you saw Brown last night, for the first time ever, distance himself from O'Malley on the real estate tax.
Right.
That was interesting, estate tax.
The estate tax.
And saying this was going to the wealthiest people in Maryland, and if I was governor, I wouldn't have signed the bill, which I said, well,
yeah.
You know,
he said
something different than O'Malley, which is something he hasn't done yet. Yeah, finally.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a first.
Yeah.
Well, because I asked him very bluntly on this program just to some major issues in which you've done something different than O'Malley, and he wouldn't.
Well, he's in a strange position. As lieutenant governor, he is obviously identified with the administration, and that's where his strength and power comes. And moving forward as a viable candidate. But at the same time, not everybody's happy with the previous administration. So he's in the same situation that many vice presidents and or lieutenant governors have been in before. How much do you identify with what has gotten you to this point? But how do you separate yourself? Because the challenge is obviously, because you're identified with the administration. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that. And but I think at this point, honestly, at this point, he's just trying to play. What's it called? Four Corners? Remember back in North Carolina?
Right.
Just hold the ball, ride it out, because he knows that if this was a three-month, three more months, he might be in trouble. But with 3 more weeks, He can probably write it out.
So what do you all? How do you all think? What do you all think about Mazur's performance last night? What she was laying out, from marijuana to the minimum wage, which she says this next governor she will not accept that we're going to have continued poverty in Maryland. We're going to have a living wage, not a minimum wage. How do you think she did?
I thought she did well. I thought that she is the voice of reason in the debate. But I do think that she's not as dynamic as the other two. And so her message somehow gets a little downplayed. I think that the fact that she was placed in the middle, you know, like we were talking about beforehand, placement was very interesting.
Yes. Right.
So
Jason?
Yeah, I am not really too much of a supporter of this living wage bill. And the reason why is because it's just not good for business in Maryland. It definitely makes us anti-competitive in the job market. You know, these jobs will easily be rolled over right into West Virginia and shipped on rail cars right to our ports, which is the busiest port right now in the East Coast. And that's going to be skipping opportunities to really build industrial jobs, smart technology jobs, jobs of the future right here. If we're looking at making certain jobs a livable wage that really and truly a lot of times are just jobs to be able to get you to the next level, maybe you're going to night school, maybe you're going to school, maybe that's a second job. But these jobs that we're talking about that we keep increasing, that keeps raising the prices of goods in the process, are not jobs that you can live off of. These are not jobs that were developed and designed in this business market to be livable wage jobs, and I really don't support this bill. What we really need to be working on is education, and I didn't hear a lot of that. I heard a lot of pre-care, pre-K, but I didn't hear a lot of trying to push people into the pathway, into these smart technology jobs, into the jobs of the future, into green energy jobs. I didn't hear that.
Well, you know, I'll just throw out this, though. I think that you know, I just saw on the news this morning that the Seattle City Council just pushed the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Right, exactly.
And that when you're talking about a livable wage, Marshall, I mean, the jobs in high tech and the jobs in big industry are already paying beyond that.
Correct.
Right. I mean, those aren't the industries that are going to be affected.
Right. Yeah. Look, with all due respect, Jason, you know, we're pretty cool. I wholeheartedly disagree with you. First, as with Seattle, which I think is phased in until 2018,
right,
the Maryland minimum wage is being phased in over, what, another 3 years or so? So it's not like it's going to be a direct or immediate hit to businesses, A. B, the second thing I heard recently, Forbes released their the top whatever, for the first time in history, the companies have generated over $1 trillion of revenue. However, as you see, the unemployment rate has pretty much leveled off. What does that tell us is that they are hoarding money. So businesses are making huge amounts of money, okay, but they're not sharing it, and people are struggling. Now, you may say that these jobs aren't intended to live off of. Well, for some folks who have no more education or other training, this is the best they got, all right? And they deserve to have a wage where at least they can pay their rent.
Right, but we need to do a better job at pushing those people out of those type of jobs.
Well, somebody's got to do those jobs.
But the problem is that
that's what other countries are doing right now. When you look at Germany, when you look at Japan, they're pushing their population into these smart jobs, into engineering, into technologies of the future, and preparing their country for these jobs, so that they can be competitive in a global market.
But the problem is, Jason, that most of the jobs that are being created now are that unfortunately, we keep talking about these technology jobs, but most of the jobs being created right now are in the service industry, mm-hmm. are in hotels, are in food service. They're not in high tech. I mean, they're just not.
Right.
And I think that we have this kind of mythology about high tech jobs are going to be worth millions of people are going to get their work. And I don't think they are. I mean, I don't think that's where
they're not there.
They're not there at the moment. They're not there, and we have to educate our children. There's no question about that. But how do you educate kids in schools without raising taxes for the schools to grow?
Right.
I mean,
to establish a stronger STEM program and more technology. They're talking about putting coding now into the curriculum. Mm. So these
coding?
Are things coding like technology coding like internet programming and. So these are things that kids need to learn in the classroom along with mathematics.
Yeah, but see, some of these things we're talking about are long-term solutions or problems or things we should address? Absolutely, we should. But immediately, there are folks who simply don't have the training or education, and they have to live. We're talking about fairness and balance. Now, I'm assuming, I haven't read all the details of the Maryland bill or the Seattle bill or other bills regarding living wage, but I assume that there is a process by which, or there are smaller businesses aren't affected by that. And I think most of us universally know that, because my dad is a small business owner. Right? He has like 8 people working for him. He pays his people more than minimum wage anyway. All right, we're not talking about hurting small businesses, but most people work for.
But
at least,
you are hurting small businesses. You're hurting small businesses. I'm a general manager of a small business, and I can tell you that you hurt small businesses when you keep increasing the
Well, you said keep increasing the minimum wage. When was the last time minimum wage was increased?
It's not about that. It has to be based on the market value of products and goods and services are.
But it also has to be based on that the cost of living has gone up tremendously in the last few years, but wages have not gone up, Jason. They haven't. Right?
But you're not understanding.
Profits go up, cost of living goes up, wages stay flat.
Supposed to keep up with the economy, but they're not. I can't run a small business like this and pay somebody $11, $12 an hour plus benefits, plus Affordable Health Care Act. I can't do that. It's not. It doesn't. With the cost of energy, the cost of rent, with the cost of goods, the cost of transportation, these things are heavy impacts right now on businesses. And businesses have not had relief. Small businesses have not had relief. I've done the books for several businesses.
Well, I mean, I've also talked and interviewed. There's probably many small businessmen. Like, let's say, for one, just came to my head, the Wine Source in Hamden, which hires 20, 30 people. They pay nobody less than $15, $16 an hour and give them health benefits. I think it depends on
the industry.
The industry and the business. Yeah.
And also, as a journalist and reporting a story, when you go out and talk to people, this is what you hear on the very lowest level, the worker level, that they cannot make it. So there's a disconnect between the worker and the business owner, and this is where everybody needs to come to the table and talk about it and try to work on some solutions to see where you go from here, because there are enormous profits being made at the top level.
Sure.
So we have to go to we're going to break now, and we're going to go to break with Curtis Mayfield. Don't worry, if there's a hell below, we're all going to go. The great Curtis Mayfield. We're going to come back and switch gears. A lot of things have happened locally in this town. I want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Including the curfew bill that just went into effect. We'll have more about that tomorrow. And the battles at Digital High between Latino and Black students. We'll cover that. And the BGF being the major bus taking place and what all that means. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Show. And if there's hell
join WEAA as we celebrate jazz in the community with a live broadcast featuring the contemporary smooth jazz duo Butch and Rhonda Coleman on Thursday, June 5th at Phase 10 Restaurant and Lounge. The live broadcast starts at 8. Marcellus, the bassman Shepard, will be your host. More information on Thursday Night Live at Phase 10 and other public radio WEAA events and activities available online at weaa.org.
Support for WEAA is provided by Aberdeen Proving Ground FCU, your community credit union, now celebrating 75 years of service to the community and members who live, work, worship, volunteer, or go to school in Harford and Cecil counties. APG Federal Credit Union, your community credit union. Member benefit information available at 410-272-4000 or online at apgfcu.com. And members like you. Thank you. Join WEAA as we celebrate jazz in the community with a live broadcast featuring the contemporary smooth jazz duo Butch and Rhonda Coleman on Thursday, June 5th at Phase 10 Restaurant and Lounge. The live broadcast starts at 8. Marcellus, the bassman Shepard, will be your host. More information on Thursday Night Live at Phase 10 and other public radio WEAA events and activities available online at WEAA.org.
It's the 88 Days of Summer. Hi, I'm Sandy Mallory, inviting you to join me Monday through Friday for cool vibes for your midday from 12 noon till 2 p.m. Getting through your lunchtime or just getting through the workday? Tune in to 88.9 FM for music to get you through your day. For jazz, classic, or contemporary sounds, join me, Sandy Mallory, for music, news, and information to move you on WEAA.
So hush not, child, and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Move on up.
Move on up.
Move on up.
Brother Curtis. We missed you, Brother Curtis. I'm reminding you on the way back to a conversation that Thursday, June 5th, WEAA is celebrating jazz in the community at Phase 10 Restaurant and Lounge. Thursday Night Live, hosted by WEAA's own Bassman, features the contemporary smooth jazz duo. I try to get that role that he does. Features the contemporary smooth jazz duo of Butch and Rhonda Coleman. The broadcast begins sharply at 8 p.m. More details available at phase10.com or at 410-462-2010. And say that whenever Bassman puts on this thing at Phase 10, it's always a great evening, good food, good drinks, good music. A lot of fun. So join WEA at Phase 10 Thursday night. Back here with Jason Rodriguez, Melody Simmons, and Marshall Bell, and you at 410-319-8888. I said during the break to my guests, and Jason, I don't know if you heard this or not coming through the mic, and I'd like to hear our listeners what they think at 410-319-8888. Rachel's here, steinershow at gmail.com, 410-319-8888. I said that I was wondering if the city can find a creative way to address some of the things it faces, not like the arrest of the BGF. I think that we need to get violent, people are violent off our streets, and those are the kind of people that do need to be separated from us, who are going to deal drugs and kill people, and I think that's one thing. But I said then, from curfew to what's happening with Black and Latino kids to the other issues facing our city, can we come up with creative solutions that aren't just about police intervention all the time? Like this curfew law, which I think that I've said on the air, I just think is a real problem, and that we could find better ways of dealing with this than having the police involved with picking up kids, and because Marshall merely disagreed, which is fine. So, but let's talk about that. I mean, sure. What about those issues, and what do you all think about the curfew bill that was passed? 410-319-8888, the BGF family issue, and also what's happening with Black and Latino kids in our community and the conflicts between them. Again, it's calling in the police. Are there more creative ways for us to deal with it than calling in the police? Other than for the murder of that poor young kid, they did need to be called in for that. But in the larger issue between those kids, are there better ways to deal with it than the police?
I'm going to jump right in. Oh, boy. You know, and the thing is, again, you know, I understand your what you're saying, and I do know that – I do believe, of course, that we should have come up with creative ways, and there are long-term solutions to some of these problems that should be initiated, and somebody should have that energy, to jump into that fight. But immediately, I live in a tough community. I'll be honest with you. I live in the Mondawmin area. Okay, I don't live in Guilford or whatever, or Pikesville. I don't know. I'm in the battle, okay? And I know that if our ultimate goal is that we want children off the streets because for their own safety, okay, and you are more likely to get in trouble, honestly, at 9 and 10, 11 o'clock. I see kids up and down Gwynn's Falls or Ricetown at 10, young kids out on the streets. Now, this may not be popular to say, but daggone, their butts need to be in the house. Now, is this the proper solution? I don't know. All I know is that what's working, what is it, how it is now is not working. And it's causing a problem. And there are too many children running around the streets, causing havoc in some of our communities. And I know that for some of us who are called so progressive, liberal, whatever, they can equate this to whatever, whatever, whatever. But I'm telling you, for me and in my community, most people in my community association applaud this because we want children, like we don't want kids running up and down with these daggone dirt bikes or running around the streets, causing havoc at 10, 11, 12 o'clock on a weekday.
Well, but
we don't want it.
The administration's answer here is to create another bureaucracy, and that is as a net to catch these children, penalize the families, charge the families, you know, who are already struggling in the first place, a fine. So this is a big debate that has happened. It involves so many issues, so many levels, and I don't think there has been a great public airing of it. And I think that this is something where people need to come together. There needs to be a forum. You need to talk a little bit more about where the family fits in, where the city fits in, where the police fit in, how all this can work together.
I would love to see the mayor spearhead that and show some leadership in creating some creative ways to address this. But for right now, look, folks in these communities, we're struggling right now. You know what I mean? And it's a struggle every day. Sometimes even they walk outside your door because people are hanging around outside, young kids, and they're intimidating older people. I guess I'm now on the side of older people. I thought I was cool. And it's a problem. Now, do I want to see police locking up young black kids? No. And there is also an issue of enforcement. Are they going to enforce the same here in West Baltimore that they do in Fells Point or Federal Hill? I don't know.
And what's the answer to that question?
Probably not. True. But it does not mean that just because there may not be equal enforcement does not mean that the idea is not a good idea or an effective idea.
Jason, why don't you jump in? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we know this is not going to be applied equitably across the city. We know that, neighborhoods like Canton are going to be left out, and Highlandtown are going to be left out. So I don't agree with this bill. I agree, just like you said during the break, Mark, that we have this penalizing mentality. We always want to come up with policies to penalize our communities, but never really want to come up with some real solutions to try to resolve these issues or try to work on these issues before the problems happen. We have leaders within our community that are already talking about some great plans, like a community resource center, or Russell Neverdon calls it a safe house, to be able to have a beacon within the community that folks can go to get the resources that they need if they're having trouble with a young man, to be able to go to that center and maybe get some men that are participating already in that community resource center, get them to be involved and get engaged and mentor some of these young men. Because the problem is that we have generational ignorance, I call it, unfortunately. We have children that were raised by children, teenagers that were raised by teenagers. We've had drugs have taken some of the family members out of the homes. We've had young men that have been incarcerated through drugs and violent crime. So the family structure is broken up. So we need some sort of resource center that we can work on projects, and we can even get the social workers that are looking to do their thesis and do their master's and to get into child psychology or to get into these different fields of social working to actually come to these resource centers and actually engage these children and try to see if we can resolve some of these issues within our community. But it has to be a commitment into the community, preemptive, not postemptive, and that's the problem. We're doing everything after we have a problem. We're tired of the children running around, so now we want to penalize the children for running around, but we don't want to give them a place to run around that's structured.
Explain to me, we're in the bill, is there a penalty for the children? I mean, I missed that.
There's a penalty for the parents.
Right, exactly. So when you say that penalizing the children, you're not being factually correct, right?
No.
But you are penalizing them when you're targeting them. These children are being targeted.
Jason, let me ask you a question.
Picked up by police.
The engagement between the police is going to be that of an engagement. Okay. What are you going to do when a 14-year-old child resists?
And what are you going to do when a 14-year-old child sticks you up? All right? Or is running around on a dirt bike at 10 o'clock at night?
Okay, I know that.
Explain that to me. It happens often. It's not like these are strange.
Whoa, gentlemen, one sec.
Trails and they have the amenities that they need, like skateboard parks and things, bike trails.
Yeah.
The reality is that most crime committed by young people is not committed between 9 at night and 6 in the morning.
No, it's just not. There's no statistical data.
The stats just tell you a different story. Mm. Whether the chaos exists is no question. Mm. So the question is, how do you address the chaos?
I want you to come to 1600 and 1700.
I'm not.
You'd be amazed at what goes on there.
Well, we see it everywhere. Kids, up in Hamilton last week, an elderly couple getting the groceries out of their car at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Boom. They were held up at gunpoint, beaten, and off they ran. The guy wouldn't give the keys up to his car, couldn't get them out of his pocket fast enough, and they were beaten.
Let me ask you all a question. Is there any good reason for a 13-year-old child to be...
I'm just asking. But I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that... Mm. I know the neighborhoods are around Tioga Parkway and the west side of town and the east side of town. I don't live there anymore, but I'm in and out of them all the time. And I do see what you're seeing. That's not the point. The point is that we can do things in a way that changed the dynamic. There was a letter to the editor by the man who runs the rec center up in Northwest Baltimore, and he's suggesting, look, my kids stay here till 9 or 10 o'clock at night. We should let that happen more often. That's where they need to be, playing basketball, learning job skills, being in the center. We need to, if people can patrol the streets, it doesn't have to be the police. When I said creative, think of safe streets. Mm-hmm. Think of young men and women who really know the community, who can come and patrol and talk to those kids and go to the homes, put social workers out at night working rather than during the day, and do something different.
I agree with all that. Those are outstanding
ideas.
Whatever
happened to nighttime basketball? Remember Bill Clinton and this whole theory of nighttime basketball?
We said that. Midnight basketball.
I'm sorry?
Midnight basketball.
Midnight basketball. Whatever happened to these events that we were talking about that was supposed to help these communities and help us to be able to do things that engage these young men instead of running and chasing them and trying to incarcerate them or penalize them? I don't understand this.
Which is something Cory Booker did in Newark. And, you know, I mean, I'm saying there can be other ways of dealing with it rather than...
I agree with all those. All of them.
Finding a minimum wage parent $300. Mm-hmm. Let's see what our listeners are thinking. But also, I want to talk about the Black-Latino divide and what's happening in Digital Harbor and where that is and what other solutions we could have besides policemen in the hallways.
Right.
Are there other ways to deal with this? 410-319-8888. Tyrone, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As Barack Obama said, if you own a tool as a hammer, then every problem becomes a nail, okay? And that stands specific for they wouldn't resonate with him, but it's a very wise thing. But you can't use law enforcement for social issues. And somebody was saying, what are you doing outside after nine anyway? Well, when I was a teenager, I worked from 7 to 10 at night. All right, I wasn't involved in anything. You can't punish every child because a few of them are bad. And the lady said somebody got robbed at 5 p.m. Well, 5 p.m. is 5 p.m. It's not 9 at night. Okay. And as
that's what she was saying.
Right.
The whole indicated most crimes committed, before those hours anyway.
Right.
So I don't know what this is intended to solve, but what it does is bring law enforcement unnecessarily in contact.
Correct.
With people who may not be criminals, with the potential of criminalizing them.
Right.
That's why I think this is not wise.
Consequences to the family, economic consequences to the family who's struggling in the first place.
So let me ask this other question. I'm just to switch gears just for a moment on you all. And the horrendous news of the young man who was stabbed to death near Digital High and this potential explosive situation between young, some segments of the young Latino community and the young Black community in Baltimore City. And also extends, as you heard from Anthony McCarthy's show last month, with people calling in really railing against the Latino community, accusing them of taking jobs and they shouldn't come to this country anyway. And so there's something is brewing here. And it's not something just around these kids. It's beyond these kids.
Yeah, and like we mentioned on the break, this is happening nationwide. And it's so unfortunate because if any community should be uniting because of common interests are the Black and brown communities. But as we see, I'm not going to go too deep. But the idea is that, it's a divide and conquer kind of thing. That if you pit two different communities that are both struggling, neither one of them can progress. And both African-Americans and Latino-Americans have more. I tell people this all the time. We have more in common than we have apart. Well, they're fighting for the same pot of resources. Well, we're all getting crumbs, okay? So wouldn't it be wiser if we all came together to fight together in order, to be a unified front? But like I see in L.A., it's no longer Crips and Bloods. It's now Black gangs versus Latino gangs. And I hope and pray that this does not come to Baltimore.
That would be a disaster.
But it seems like it's on its way.
Right now, there are not too many Latino gangs in town, but they're creeping northward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think we see a bigger theme here, a more common theme, and that is there's such a disconnect with young people. There's such a disconnect from young people. And this is where you need experts to step in. You don't need more policing. You need more understanding. And that is important right now.
Right. Jason?
When you have lack of resources in the community, and we just said this the other day when Mark was on Anthony McCartney's show, we all have the same common interests and same common problems within our communities. We all want better schools. We all want better housing. And the Latinos, when they do come into this the different states around the country, they don't go to the more affluent communities. They go where they can afford. They go where a lot of times their markets and their resources are available and where they can get services at. And a lot of times that's within the urban communities. Mm-hmm. So we all have a lot of common interests. And unfortunately, when you're dealing with communities that are disparate, lack of resources, failed schools, recreational centers closing, and we're not supporting these children, unfortunately, they're going to engage into other activities. And this is another form of activity, them banding together and joining together as groups, mm-hmm. you know, and their little cliques and their little posses, you know. But we need to engage them to stop this and show them that there are common interests between each one of these particular groups.
And I was thinking, you know, as a mother, I'm a mother of teenagers and young adults, that I really feel that a lot of kids just need to get in a room and talk to each other.
Yeah, right.
They're going to find that they have really the same goals, the same ideals, and it needs to be fostered that way.
But guess what? You know, the thing about it is that, you know, we would want to teach our children that. But the problem is that the human experience has been one where folks band together according to what they see immediately, that are common, what we look like, or we're all men, or we're all Latinos, or we're all kind of brown or black or whatever the color, or white or whatever it is. That's how we're going to unite. So it's hard to teach that lesson to children when they see the example from adults and from the world around them, that folks band together according to what the surface things that seem to be to draw the commonalities, you know.
But I wonder if in schools like Digital Harbor High or Patterson or other places where black and Latino kids really do meet, and there's a few other schools like that where they really, those populations are together. If what Melody was saying isn't something we should be trying, I understand the police presence outside to stop violence is that's the nature of their business. But inside those hallways and walking around, if we wouldn't do something more based on community conferencing, based on ideas of pulling kids together in groups to do things creative, to begin working together and talking together, to begin to dampen down the violence and anger between the groups, to see what you were saying, Marshall, and what you were saying, Melody, is a real commonality.
Right.
You know, and again, that's what I'm talking about, the creative response to bring these people.
And now's a good time, because, again, as we see
now's
in Baltimore,
a perfect moment.
Perfect moment,
now
because
is the time.
We have an increasing Latino population. I welcome it. I think it's beautiful to have some more diversity in the city. Now is the time to start thinking that, because it's going to be more and more, right? And if you have early problems in Digital Harbor and probably in other schools, now is the time to start taking those steps. I guess even with the past issue we were talking about as far as curfew, we're so far gone. It's just, you know, maybe, and I hope folks don't think I'm trying to be some lock 'em up kind of person. I'm not.
I know you're not,
you know,
Marshall.
I'm not.
I know
really
you're not.
Not.
I know you're not.
I see
not.
A situation that is out of control in many neighborhoods, you know. And it's like, well, what do we do now? You know, because those solutions you talk about are long term, and they take a lot of effort and
they
energy, and maybe should be done.
They
don't get me wrong.
They do. No, you're right.
But immediately, folks are suffering. That's
and you start point. Small. You start one on one. One Latino child or a teenager, one African American teenager, and you get them in a group one on one, and you get these smaller groups going. You get the dialogue going. And it works.
Let me just read these two quick things. One was a piece from the Sun papers, and we'll open the phones here, 410-319-8888 once again. The Sun reported that said Baltimore police plan to deploy officers around city schools until the school year ends to ensure student safety and recent racial tensions, while school officials join civil rights leaders to urge students of different races to peacefully resolve their differences. And we also had, Abdul on Twitter saying, finally returned to Be More. I'd love to. Oh, that says something to me personally. I'm sorry. Let me go back. That's not for me. Let's go to this comment on curfew. Raul Medina Ceballos wrote in, social and economic investment in public programs designed for our youth by the communities that house them. All too often we see strategic disinvestment in our future to be put in to speculative big time developments. It's so irritating. I mean, we can come up with things that I think that are not punitive. This is a perfect time, if we just said, to bring these kids together
with
in
summer
dialogue.
Coming on,
you know,
and start small, not big.
Where's the liaisons from the city involved in all of this? You know, where are they at as far as trying to bridge the communities? Because a lot of times, too, we have to take this back to the parents.
Right.
And you know, bring these parents together and really build a sense of community, especially with the growing Hispanic population.
We haven't heard from the city.
Well, we need
on
leadership,
this.
Right?
And this is
question.
A problem.
Leadership.
It seems to be very silent. As a reporter trying to report on these issues, it's very difficult to get information out of City Hall. Mm. Very.
So this is a bit, it's not a very transparent place.
It is not transparent.
410-319-8888. Ed, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I would just like to say, I mean, we can do whatever we can for these kids. But the minute they go back home, whatever the family views are, the grandparents, or whether they got negativity or anything else, that's what the kid's going to resort right back to. Hmm. So it all falls back to lack of parenting, lack of respect for your elders.
Hmm. Well, there's also the role of the churches as well. This could be a time for the churches to step up and try to foster some better understanding and maybe pave the way for a better dialogue in that age group and also with the families, make the bridge with the families as well.
Right.
There's a comment here, and we'll go back to the phones. Again, this is more about what we're talking about earlier. Tyrone Thorpe writes in, no, I see it as the as a law that creates unintended targets. There needs to be more rec centers, capital more, that wrote in. And Matthew Loftus writes in, or tweeted in, this isn't a problem with easy solutions. Hard to describe a policy that encourages parents to better supervise their children. You know, and talking about what we said earlier, I mean, whoever these kids are, they go back home, they will be influenced by their parents. But I've spent years working with kids before I did radio. And you can have an effect on young people's minds by having them interact with each other, work together. They will not be affected adversely by their parents because they wanted because kids are young and they change and they see change.
Yeah.
And if they're in a place
and they're more open-minded, you know,
they're open-minded.
They
you
are.
Know?
But again,
it's like when these. I'm just go ahead, right, Marshall. It was like when these black kids and Latino kids came together on the Dream Act and organized together. They overcame their barriers.
Yeah.
For this particular issue.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think that children are generally open-minded and they can receive a new way of thinking. At the same time, it's difficult to place them in an environment, and I'm not just talking about in their parents' home. I'm talking about their world view that it's us against them. It's always about us coming together, whether it be Americans for nationalism or whether it be this community or this nation or this my color. Mm-hmm. It's hard to place them in that and then tell them we want you to do something, be something different and view somebody that doesn't look like you a different way when everything else they see from the TV, from the radio to the news is all about separation, not uniting people. So it's difficult. We're asking them to be and do something that is different than what their human experience is on a day-to-day basis.
That's where a community resource center could really come in handy at, bridging the gaps, you know, being able to work on some of these issues and building communities, showing communities how to be communities, because we don't know how in a lot of these communities in Baltimore City, how to be first a community.
So let's go back to the phones here. And there was a comment that there's also a lot of black Latino kids in Baltimore, which something we can.
We're talking to one, Jason Rodriguez.
That's right.
Kid, I called you kid. So compliment.
A little older than a kid, but yes. 410-319-8888.
Let's go.
No problemo. Ernest, you're on the air. Ernest, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Ernest, you're on the air.
Yeah. Well, Marshall.
Yes, sir.
I've heard you talk a lot of times about your childhood and basically what you said. But for the grace of God, go I. Mm-hmm. And the fact that your family stood by you during your trials and tribulations.
Yes, sir.
It wasn't the police officers that straightened you out.
Right.
It was your family that straightened you out.
Right.
But had it been the police officers, you could have had a different fate.
Yeah, but see,
you
understand
what I mean.
I agree with you 100%, but guess what? Here's the thing. I had the benefit of parents who, first of all, they had me when they were in their mid-20s. They were already professionals. Well, actually, my mom was around 19, but she was in at Morgan. My dad was preparing to go to dental school. The point I make is that I had a family structure of parents who knew how to parent, okay? The decisions that I made really had nothing to do with them being bad parents. I just made bad decisions. And I'm not saying that, y'all can interpret it by saying that the police should do parenting. I'm not saying that, or the system should intervene. The point I'm making is that, like we said earlier, you have children having children. You have children who don't know how to be parents, and they're having kids. So I agree with. I understand what you're saying, but my situation is a little bit different. Okay.
Yes, but what Ernest was saying, though, is the question of can we? Is there a way to approach this problem that doesn't involve putting another layer of work on the police,
right?
And let them focus on BGF and find a different way to focus on the issues that you're concerned about in the neighborhood you live in.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's about parenting. But again, like I said, if you have folks who don't know how to be good parents, is that really the solution? Because the parents don't know how to parent.
Well, a lot of kids are bored, too, and they're not challenged. And
a lot of parents just say, go outside and play.
Right.
Okay,
that's
too, right?
Well, that's what my parents did to me, go outside and play.
Yes.
We played all day long without parents around.
Yeah. You had safe playgrounds, and if you really wanted to, you had a recreational center that you could go to and a local pool if you wanted to go to. You had these resources, Mark. A lot of these children don't have the basic resources just to be a kid, just to be a child.
Right. Right.
No, I agree completely. I mean, we don't have the public pools. We don't have the rec centers. You know, when you don't have the kind of boxing gyms kids go to and work. I mean, those things just aren't
readily absent positive
available.
Options, children, like anybody, will get into whatever they can get into. And that's what kids do.
Right.
Whether you're poor or you're rich or whatever, that's what
children
do.
And I think it would be very interesting to understand this from the eyes of a child. I think if we gave diaries out to kids and said, write daily what you're facing, write daily what you see, write daily what you're thinking and experiencing, let's see it after 30 days.
So let me just say this. You guys are a great-ranging discussion. I really appreciate the time you've given our listeners in WEA and my show today. It was really good to have you all here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Marshall Bell, always good to have you in studio, brother. Great to see you. I love the work you're doing. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And same with you, Melody.
Thank you.
Melody Simmons, one of our great reporters in town. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much.
And Jason Rodriguez,
you
weren't in the studio, but it's always good to have your voice and your ideas.
Thank you, sir. I was honored to be a part of a stellar panel this morning. I'm sorry.
That's right, brother. It's all right. Good to have you here. And we're going to tackle curfew and the Black-Latino divide in the coming days here on the Mark Steiner Show and some longer segments as well, because we do have to really jump into this with some seriousness. We'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. And also, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or for either one, just go to Mark Steiner Show's website, steinershow.org, and click on MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, Baltimore Credit Union's banner, or the MSEA banner. They're right there. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. It is time now for Sound Bites. We're going to talk about the meat industry and what we don't know about it and what we need to know about it. And we're going to go to break with a bit more of Curtis Mayfield, Superfly. Stay with us.
Darkest of night with the moon shining bright. There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long. Oh, Superfly.